Thanks to donors like you, Aquinas 101 is setting the world aflame with the truth, but the next season can't be filmed without your help. Dozens of new episodes are planned, but they'll only be brought to life if you make them possible. Your gift by October 31st will bring the truth to students, families, and people around the world. Please use the link in the episode description below to give today.
Welcome to the Thomistic Institute podcast. Our mission is to promote the Catholic intellectual tradition in the university, the church, and the wider public square. The lectures on this podcast are organized by university students at Thomistic Institute chapters around the world. To learn more and to attend these events, visit us at ThomisticInstitute.org.
We are accustomed to understand things with our mind, which we hope to do over the next 2 days, but our attention will also be directed towards better understanding the mind itself, or at least improving our understanding of what key thinkers in late antiquity and the Middle Ages understood the mind to be. Our specific concern is with the rational soul, particularly with the rational operations of memory, intellect, and will, in the context of a particular period of time, the 13th century, and with a focus on the Augustinian heritage of this taxonomy, or let's say with the Augustinian spirit of this description of human rationality, and its reception by 13th century thinkers, especially Albert the Great and Thomas Aquinas. So generically speaking, our theme lies with human rationality and with the specific quality of this rationality, which, as both ancient philosophy and Christian theology assume, shares an affinity to or similarity with the divine. So we are concerned with a group of questions surrounding the meaning of rationality and the description of the rational soul, which, by focusing on Augustine's Trinitarian description of the mind, offers a starting point for assessing some 13th century developments in philosophical anthropology. Because Augustine is an almost universal authority in this period, and because his description of the mind remains of key import for 13th century discussions of rationality, no great justification is needed for this procedure. So conceptually, we're confronted with questions concerning the rational soul, what it is, how it differs from other animal souls, and more specifically, what it does, what its specific powers or operations are, and wherein its function and purpose lies. Historically, we are interested in how 13th century thinkers address these questions in the context of the influx of a variety of schools of thought and on the basis of their reception of the Augustinian psychological triad of memoria, intellectus, and voluntas. So the key question for us over the next days is, how are memory, intellect, and will conceptualized in the 13th century, and how are they used to describe the rational soul and its activity? And to what extent do different philosophical and theological currents influence this description? Let me begin by saying something about Augustine, his philosophical background, and his description of human rationality, in order to allude to a number of controversies that his position creates in the 13th century, in the context of an Aristotelian understanding of the soul, which gains considerable traction in this period. This is just a sketch, but it provides a classical starting point for our discussion as a basis. Of course, questions concerning the soul can be taken to be primarily theological, but they must be taken seriously in their philosophical dimension, if only for historical reasons. From Socrates through Plato to Aristotle, with Plotinus and most other Neoplatonists to the Greek and Roman Stoa, almost all ancient and classical philosophy were centrally concerned with answering questions on the soul and human rationality, before Christianity was born, and beyond its advent. We find in the early church fathers a sophisticated reception of these philosophies that are often criticized, sometimes refuted, at times transformed, but seldomly rejected wholesale. Augustine, sometimes called the greatest of the fathers, is a prime example. Before becoming one of the most eminent Christian theologians, Augustine is a trained philosopher, absorbing key aspects of Platonic and Stoic philosophy, and who continues to address and develop their concerns in his work and according to the wisdom he discovers through his faith. This background is key to understanding his account of the soul and his commitment to the spiritual identity of man, and to appreciate his location of this identity, what he calls the inner man, in the spiritus or mens, which crowns the human configuration, as well as understanding the centrality of its happiness for Augustine. The anthropological centrality of nous, of spirit or reason, which Augustine inherits from the Platonists, especially Plotinus, and the key ethical concern with the good or happy life, is to some extent radicalized by the Stoic influence Augustine receives. While the Platonists subscribe to a graduality of the soul, with reason at the top, the Stoics, as materialists, deny the soul and its afterlife. Because they are also determinists to a certain degree, they are searching for a description of the mind which extracts it from this consequence and allows for human agency to be considered rational, responsible, and good. Cicero and Seneca are of decisive influence for Augustine in this respect. If we are to be the responsible owners of our actions in a comprehensively determined world, even our bodies, for the Stoics, our mind, our intellect, or reason must be radically different from everything else. Only the mind, only our reason is properly under our control, according to the Stoics. And we are indeed our mind, strictly speaking. And our mind's choice is the only thing that really matters, according to Epictetus, since everything else is under the governance of extraneous forces. Though Augustine adopts from the Platonists the rational soul as the key principle of human identity, its otherworldly destiny, and its similarity to God, as well as its relation to him as the horizon of its being, he adopts the principles of the rational mind and its agency from the Stoa, by retracing all human action, properly speaking, to the mind. At the same time, because the Platonic tendency to identify man with spirit only leads to a depreciation of the material world, and Augustine's own experience with Manichaeism testifies to that, Augustine rejects this doctrine and offers a positive revaluation of the physical universe, which constitutes an important correction to Platonic idealism and its dualist model. If the Platonists hold that only the soul provides for our identity, and the Stoics are convinced that if there is any soul, it can be reduced to a material substrate, Augustine champions a middle position where soul and body, though hierarchically differentiated, enter into a relationship in which the mind takes the upper hand. Not only because of this, Augustine's Platonizing Stoicism exhibits some important affinities with Aristotle. And these help to illustrate, on the one hand, Augustine's centrality in philosophical anthropology in the 13th century and why Aristotle was considered to be a philosophical ally of Augustine by some of his 13th century interpreters, as well as the apparent clash between Aristotle and Augustine in this period. The harmony of soul and body, Augustine envisions, is the order and rule of the rational mind over all parts of the human being. due to the fact that the mens, or spiritus, is the most excellent thing, most closest to God. Augustine's concept of rationality, of the mind as the head or eye of the soul, displays a rational psychic hierarchy that is radically intellectualist. And his understanding of wisdom and the good life consists in the hegemony of reason, assigned with ordering human desire according to a rational hierarchy. Augustine embraces a characteristically ancient brand of eudaimonism, defending two central pillars of it. Firstly, men universally desire happiness. No one does not want to be happy. And secondly, such happiness, gaudium de veritate, lies in contemplating truth. The intellect's contemplative object, truth, big T, is personified in God for Augustine. While this description of the human being bears important similarities to Aristotle, there are key discrepancies here which go beyond the externalization of man's final end. We can find important disagreements between Augustine and Aristotle concerning the nature of the soul, the immateriality of memory, the intellect's mode of cognition, or epistemology, as you say today, and the will's status as rational. For Augustine, the memory, the intellect, and the will make up one mind, or one reason, expressing itself as memory, intellect, and will. For Aristotle, the mind is an intellect, which either absorbs or subordinates the memory and will as sensitive powers. We also find some differences regarding their description of the soul and its relation to the mind, and this provides some cause for controversy in the 13th century. Despite of his positive revaluation of matter, Augustine remains very much attached to the Platonic idea of man as his own soul, which, if not trapped in a body, is nevertheless somehow restrained by it, the inner man. This view is strengthened by the Stoic conviction of man's identity with his mind. Augustine's belief that the immaterial and eternal soul is most properly who we are, and his search for the identity of the inner man, leads him to describe the soul and the mind in a way that clashes with Aristotle's position. Augustine is not unambiguous about the soul's nature and unity, or unicity. In fact, it is possible to interpret Augustine as sustaining a multiple forms theory, which not few medieval interpreters did, much to the chagrin of 13th century Aristotelians. But it's simply not clear what the status of the supposedly hegemonic rational soul is for Augustine, metaphysically speaking. On the one hand, he understands mind to be preeminent in the soul. And he also claims that this mens denotes the substance or essence of man, thereby supposedly identifying the mind with the substance of the soul. On the other hand, Augustine appears to distinguish the inner man of the mind and the outer man of the senses and body, which supposedly obtains its own principle of life. So there's uncertainty about this, or disagreement. A number of related problems result from Augustine's Trinitarian description of the mind. According to Augustine, the mind, which is highest in man, accommodates the imago Dei, for which reason he, of course, distinguishes its operations in a Trinitarian fashion into memory, intellect, and will. These do not, however, constitute different powers for Augustine, but are one mind, without being identical to it. And they belong to man, or are in man, according to him. Memory, intellect, and will do not therefore constitute different acts of the mind, strictly speaking, but are the mind as remembering, understanding, and willing. Wherefore they cannot be properly distinguished in the mind, let alone from the mind. It's important to spell this out because we are so habituated to faculty psychology that we are almost invariably tempted to commit what John Rist calls the faculty error, which is reading a facultative understanding of the soul's powers back into this Trinitarian configuration of the Augustinian mind. But for Augustine, the inner man is the mind. He is what is highest in the soul, and this inner man consists of memory, intellect, and will. It is these three things, without being made of three different things. It is the rational soul, or mind, which remembers, understands, and wills. Now, philosophically speaking, it's not particularly helpful to have to refer to Augustine's sophisticated Trinitarian theology in order to make this unity in diversity function, or fully intelligible for us. Of course, Augustine himself is not particularly helpful either in speaking about the remembering, understanding, and willing mind in facultative terms often. In reading Augustine, one must constantly remind oneself that the mind is reason, that it is memory, and is will, as it were, that they aren't individual powers or independent acts of the same power, but that they are the mind or the rational soul as remembering, knowing, and loving. As much as we may enjoy Augustine's thesis, and I do so considerably, this approach, alas, does not enjoy the longest shelf life, at least in the 13th century. Let me close by making the contestable claim that the reason for this is partly due to the influence of Aristotle, partly due to his Arabic reception, and partly due to Augustine himself or his readers. It is due to Augustine or his readers because Augustine regularly substantivizes memoria, intellectus, and voluntas. In his description of memory, in his insistence on reason's governance, and most problematically perhaps in his attribution of choice to the will, particularly the free choice of evil or sin, he appears to use a facultative or talk as if he has a facultative understanding. So it's difficult to read Augustine and remain convinced of their complete unity. It is also due to the influence of Aristotle that this picture of the mind is not so successful, since Aristotle insists on the uniformity or unicity of the rational soul, which relegates memory and will to the material or animal aspect of man. And of course, the formal unicity of the soul is a big troublemaker question in the 13th century. Thirdly, it is also, allegedly, due to the Avicennian reading of Aristotle, which imposes a facultative understanding of the will onto Aristotle, who supposedly does not have a concept of will, so there's this other discussion there, and eliminating memory as a properly rational power, which results in a dualism of rational powers, of intellect and will, which is pervasive in the 13th century and persists until this day in large measure. The debates concerning the unity of the substantial form, the rational status of memory, and the relationship between the intellect and the will as rational powers, as well as many other 13th century arguments, can be read as the result of trying to maintain an Augustinian description of the rational soul on the ground of significantly changed philosophical conditions, not only with regard to the absorption of Aristotle's philosophy. Because all 13th century authors, with few exceptions, highly revere Augustine and claim him for their cause, it is of quite some interest to see how they approach his description of the mind and what becomes of the Augustinian triad of memory, intellect, and will, which in the coming days, with the help of these excellent scholars here gathered, we will have the opportunity to learn more about. Thank you for your kind attention, and I wish you an enjoyable and informative couple of days.
Thanks for listening to this lecture on the Thomistic Institute podcast. The generosity of people like you makes this podcast possible. If you enjoy these talks, please consider showing your support at www.thomisticinstitute.org/donate. Your donation of even a dollar helps us reach more college students and many others with the powerful truths of the faith, and it ensures that we can keep publishing top-notch lectures on this podcast. Thanks a lot.